get my shoes and out the door. 5, I'm alive. 6, 7, 8, feeling great. Hello, BYWG Tribe. This is Dr. Noah. We wanted to make you aware of our never-before-featured Product of the Month and newly released Book of the Month for February 2018. Keep in mind, all the links, discount codes, and special offers for the product and book will be listed in the show notes in iTunes, in our weekly newsletter, and on our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com at the Listen Now tab. Our product of the month is Purity Coffee, whose tagline is Improving the World's Health Through Coffee. We are huge fans of quality coffee at BYWG, and this is some of the best and healthiest coffee hands down. Our book of the month is Beyond the Label, 10 Steps to Improve Your Mental Health with Naturopathic Medicine by Dr. Christina Jarndal, ND. Both John Butcher discussing Purity Coffee and Dr. Christina Jarndal discussing her newest book can be heard on the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast during the month of February.
Hello and welcome back to Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. My name is Dr. Noah DeCoyer and I'm your co-host. Today I'm super excited to have Dr. Christine Bjorndal on the show today. When my friend Dr. Guillermo Ruiz suggests I have somebody on, I jump on that opportunity. How are you today, Doc?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. So let me do your bio. It's pretty quick and succinct, and then we'll just get started. Dr. Christina completed her doctorate in naturopathic medicine from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. She is considered an authority in the treatment of mental illnesses such as depression, anxiety, bipolar disorders, and eating disorders. Having overcome many of these health challenges, Dr. Chris is a gifted speaker and writer and has shared her personal story and philosophy of wellness with audiences across North America. Dr. Chris has helped many patients achieve physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. She has completed 3 books on mental health, as well as a 10-week course and in-person retreat on mental health. The book we're going to most focus on today is Beyond the Label, 10 Steps to Improve Your Mental Health with Naturopathic Medicine. We liked it so much that we featured it as the Beyond Your Wildest Genes February 2018 Book of the Month. Another book by Dr. Chris is The Essential Diet, and in some courses, Moving Beyond 10-Week Course and Mental Health Masterclass. That's a great bio. How are you today?
Yeah, no, I'm doing good. I thank you for featuring the book. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, that's our pleasure. That's our pleasure. Yeah. Now, you know, the book is pretty, in my estimation, phenomenal. It's pretty much split up into 2 parts. And the first part is really where I wanted to start, because you really get really personal in the book about your journey, your story, how you got, you know, where you are today. So I was wondering if we could do that for the audience as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will basically just share what happened to me. So I a lot of people ask me, you know, how did I become a naturopathic doctor and where did this all start? And some people laugh when I actually say, you know, I think it started in utero for me. So I'm adopted, and I start my book with a discussion about how the environment of the environment when you're in the womb can create neurological and emotional imprinting on that fetus that can actually set you up perhaps for some mental health challenges. And there's some research that supports that. In my childhood, I was adopted into a great home, and I just had what everybody chalked up to be sort of the normal childhood turbulences and traumas and tribulations, just with a little bit of bullying here and there. And then things, we moved a few times, but then when I got into high school or junior high rather, I developed an eating disorder, which was really also partly due to this peer influence that my friends had over me. So I succumbed to that, but I will make a little side note and mention that the year prior to the development of the eating disorder, I did a year of antibiotics for acne. And we know now that there's a relationship between the gut biome and the development of mental health, or the connection to mental health challenges later in life. After high school, I went on to university. I was always very overachieving, And I continued that overachieving tendency into university. But by the time I got to my third year, I found myself paralyzed by anxiety and in a debilitating depression. The only problem was I didn't understand that that's what I was experiencing because I didn't have the words to explain or express what I was going through. It wasn't until I went to the doctor at the request of a friend who was concerned about me that I was then given those diagnoses and prescribed an antidepressant, which I started. And within 3 months of taking that, I then had a full-blown delusional psychotic manic episode. And then I was given the diagnosis of bipolar disorder type 1, which was really hard for me to swallow. I really hadn't digested the first two diagnoses, and I was still in denial about the eating disorder. And then here I have this other quite stigmatizing label to process. And I really didn't process it. I just basically wore the mask that everything was okay on the outside and pretended that it was okay on the inside when it really wasn't. I continued to overachieve, continued to push through, went on to work in the corporate world where 6 years into my career, I ended up reporting to the CEO. But I had a lot of depression during that time, and I did have a suicide attempt in 1994 that left me in a coma with kidney failure, and I was on dialysis and was told I needed a kidney transplant. And when I came out of that coma and was told all that I was, you know, this is what had happened, and I can tell you I really wasn't happy about that, and I really was quite disappointed that I was still here, but obviously there's other reasons why I'm still here. And I look at that time as really the turning point in the spiritual crisis for me, because I up until that point I really did not like myself and did not love the fact that I had these labels that I was masking and hiding, living in a lot of shame, a lot of stigma. And so that really unfolded the journey for me to start looking at how can I learn to love and accept myself, and how can I find a better way to manage these illnesses, and is there another way other than just the psychotropic medication approach? And that's when I learned about naturopathic medicine and orthomolecular medicine, and I went to see a quite famous Canadian physician named Dr. Abraham Hoffer, and he started me on nutrition and supplements, and then I actually started to feel better, which I had glimpses of joy, and I actually felt happy, and I hadn't really felt that for about 15 years prior to that. And then I began to, once I started to feel better, I realized that, you know, I really wasn't, and even though I had a great job, I wasn't really enjoying that job. It wasn't fulfilling my passion or my purpose. And so then I went back to high school after asking myself the one question, which was, if money didn't matter, what would I be doing with my life? And the answer that came up for me was to go back to school and to help people regain their mental health the way I have, using naturopathic medicine. And so that's what's brought me to today. And I decided to write the book and share my story. You know, I really haven't, up until publishing this book, I have still been very secretive about the bipolar piece. I remember in medical school, I would tell people that I had depression. I didn't mind sharing about the eating disorder. I didn't mind saying that I had anxiety, but I drew the line at saying that I had bipolar disorder. And I really did not want anyone to know, but I have decided to share my story because the party line is, when you get diagnosed with this condition, is that there is no other option except medication. And I think it's time that people really know that it's not that it's just the Western approach that's available to you. There is this naturopathic approach that can also help you. And, you know, I'm alive today because of Western medicine and psychotropic medication, but I thrive in my life because of naturopathic medicine and alternative medicine. And I want people to thrive, not simply survive their lives. So,
you know, I think one of the reasons why this book resonates so much for me is that I have countless patients and other close people in my life that start off with some sort of small depression, and they get one medication, and there's so many now I'm starting to forget the names.
Oh yeah.
And then it alters their brain chemistry a little bit, and they're on another medication, and then before you know it, 5 years down the line, they're on 7 different medications. I don't, you know, their brain chemistry is so distorted that they can't see anything but another med or another diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for our audience to hear somebody speaking about depression, bulimia, bipolar, suicide attempts, and then coming back the other end, becoming a naturopathic doctor, and now changing people's lives every day is just about as powerful as the messages you could have.
Well, you know, and this is the thing. We don't – you're right. Most people are on a polypharmacy prescription, and we don't study medications that way in the research lab. We study them in isolation. But then here we are in the field prescribing – a sleeping pill and an antidepressant and an anti-anxiolytic and a couple of mood stabilizers, and the list goes on and on. And it's just, I think it's just a sin, really. I just think it's ridiculous.
And then they start monitoring liver enzymes, and then all of a sudden their kidneys stop functioning, and they're on dialysis for the rest of their life.
That's right.
It's amazing. Anyway, so, I mean, we could stay on that soapbox forever. But now you have a practice in a clinic, a rather large clinic, naturopathic clinic in Canada. Is everything you do focus on mental illness, or do you see other people for quote unquote, you know, normal health concerns and issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you first start out in practice, you're a general practitioner, and you are seeing whatever the patient's requests are. But now that I've been in practice for a long time and I have a long wait list, I've developed an application process where I pretty much just focus solely on mental health now. So if you were to call, you know, up the clinic to see me because you have psoriasis, I would refer you to somebody else, most likely. The other area that I do specialize in, and is another book that I'm going to write about at some point, is the other area is fertility and hormones. But there is a hormonal component to the mental health work that I do. But the other real area that I really enjoy in practice is fertility, which is another big epidemic. I think the difficulty that people are having nowadays conceiving, you know, I didn't see that 20 years ago. So it's a real challenge for a lot of young families.
Absolutely. And as soon as that book is published, we'll have you back on for that topic, without a doubt. From a normal patient in your clinic, the differences between someone who has mental illness, how does that whole process different? How is that teased out? What are you focusing more on people with mental illness? Are there different supplements? Are you focusing more on sleep? I know you talk about spirituality and love in the book, with love actually maybe being the most important component of it all. How is your treatment of that mental ill patient different?
Well, really what I explain to people is, and it wouldn't really be any different even if you had acne, but really if you had acne, we might not be diving into these areas as deep as what I'm about to explain with when I work with somebody with mental health. But basically what people need to understand is that there's four aspects to you as a person. So you have the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, and that is within all of us. Whether people want to acknowledge that or not, that is the truth. And our Western system is focused on the physical only for the most part, unless you're going to work with a psychologist who will then perhaps, you know, get into the other three areas. But in naturopathic medicine, we are about holistic medicine. We're about looking at you as a whole individual. So we really want to look at all four areas. Now, I'm just going to speak quickly to the physical. When I'm working with someone with mental health, I explain that there's three macro systems within your body. And this is anybody with any health condition. You have your neurotransmitters, and then you have your neuroendocrine or your hormonal system. which consists of your hypothalamus, pituitary, your thyroid, your ovaries or testes in men, and the adrenal glands. Some people include the pancreas and the heart as part of the endocrine system as well. And then you have your organs of detoxification, so your liver, kidneys, colon, lungs, skin, lymphatic system. So all of those three macro systems are working together within your body. It's not like there is silos set up where the neurotransmitters don't talk to the hormones and the hormones aren't affected by the organs of detoxification. Everything is interacting. But the problem is our Western medical system is set up in silos. If you have a problem with your hormones, you go to the endocrinologist. If you have a problem with your mental health, you go to the psychiatrist, and the two do not speak to each other. So we have to be talking integratively and holistically when we're working with health, because that's how it exists within the body. And so then I explain that the way that I support those three macro systems is the foundation of health is diet, then sleep, exercise, and managing stress. And then the next areas, which pertains more so specifically to mental health, is we then look further into, well, what are your thought processes? How are your emotions? How do you behave and react in the world? We talk about the environment from three perspectives. Number one, the quality of the air, food, and water. Because here's the thing. In mental health, most people will say to you, okay, you're depressed because you're not making enough serotonin. So we're going to prescribe a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor medication, an SSRI for short, so that there's enough serotonin to get across that synaptic cleft and to bind to that receptor on the other side. But from my perspective, and I hear this time and time again, you know, hey, they say to me, hey, doctor, I was prescribed an antidepressant and they kept upping the dose, but I wasn't getting better. Well, what that tells me is maybe that's not the problem. Maybe you're not deficient in the serotonin. Maybe you have something blocking the receptor from the environment, which is one of the keys of this whole environmental piece of the puzzle. Or maybe it's that they're using a hammer and you need a wrench, i.e. you need to look at one of the other macro systems. The second component with respect to the environment is this idea of epigenetics. So again, when you get diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1, you get told that this is a genetic disease, that there is nothing you can do. Your only option is to take this psychotropic mood stabilizing medication for the rest of your life. And you often get diagnosed in your early 20s, late teens. So therefore, you're taking this medication for decades, right? 5 decades, depending on how long you're going to live. But as you mentioned, these medications have side effects. Long-term use can cause kidney failure. So in my mind, I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why would I take something that is going to end up killing me in the long run? And also, because I'm adopted, I couldn't look to my left or my right and verify the validity of that statement. So I never accepted it as the gospel. I looked for other answers, which you can now find in this concept of epigenetics, which means genes load the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger. So it's not so much whether you have the gene, it's whether the gene is turned on or off. And this is affected by environmental influences. And then the last concept with respect to the environment is this idea of neuroplasticity, which basically means that there is nothing fixed about you. You can change. And there's a book written by a Canadian psychiatrist his name is Norman Doidge, and the book is called The Brain That Changes Itself. And then the last area that I think is important is spirituality, and then wrapping everything up in this concept of love and compassion for yourself. Because at the end of the day, it really does come down to how you feel in your own skin. And if you are at war with yourself, as many people are when they're struggling with their mental health, this is a really key component at the core of your being that has to be addressed. I know that if I didn't address this, I mean, I've had more than one suicide attempt. I mean, I talk about the one suicide attempt in the book, and I've talked about it, you know, which is the same one that I talk about, you know, I'm talking about with you today. But there's been more than one, and it really wasn't until I learned to develop some love and compassion for myself that has, you know, turned around for me. So that, I think I went on a long explanation to the answering your question, how do I work with mental health? But that's basically my approach. And that's how I work with it. If you were to come see me for a thyroid condition, I would still be working on explaining it very similarly to how I just explained it to you now. So,
to me, it just sounds that the way to solve this quote unquote illness or problem, however you want to call it, is through a very comprehensive approach. There is no one supplement or one medication, or it has to be a well-rounded approach to truly heal that person. I'm assuming you would agree with that.
I agree. Yes. I mean, that's where I started. I started with the diet and the supplements. That's where I started, back in 1999, 2000. And that got me so far, for sure. But I kept bumping up against myself. You're going to be bumping up against yourself every step of the way. And if you never look at your thoughts, you never look at your core beliefs, you never look at your shadow beliefs, you never look at these pieces of the puzzle, you will continue. I mean, I don't want to say everybody will, but I certainly did continue to struggle.
What strategies are you using to tackle this emotional piece?
Mm-hmm. So I have training in 5 types of therapy. So I have training in Gestalt psychotherapy, compassion-focused therapy, mindfulness-based therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and something called integrative reprogramming technique. So I weave in elements from all 5 aspects into my counseling with patients. So I start with the emotional piece. I start with simply a very simple technique that I call the 7 R's of working with problematic thoughts and emotions. So basically, do you want me to go through it?
Yeah.
What they are?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the 7 R's, basically there's 2 ways to enter this piece. One is through looking at your thoughts. The other is looking at your emotions, but they're both, you know, connected to each other. So the 7 R's of working with problematic thoughts and breaking the thought emotion cycle is really about bringing some awareness to either what you're feeling, so whatever the emotion is that's arising within you, or the thought that's triggering that emotion. And the first R is recognize the emotion or the thought. The second R is to refrain from following it any further by relaxing into the breath. And then there's a breathwork piece that I teach. Because what people have to understand is what the thoughts you think affect the physiological cascade of hormones that get produced and neurotransmitters that get produced in your body. So if you want to feel different, you have to think a little bit differently. Now, this was really hard for me at first because I used to feel like, you know, when people said to me things like, oh, Chris, come on, you know, just think positive, or snap out of it, or, you know, what do you have to be depressed about? I really took offense to those kinds of statements because I felt like they were implying that I just had to, you know, snap my fingers and I would feel better. And so I want to be clear here that I'm not saying just to think positive, because that's not what I'm saying. Because what I am saying is pay attention to what you're thinking. And if it's not serving you, if it is a negative thought, don't attach to it anymore. Don't follow it anymore. Don't add to it. Like I used to, a suicidal thought would come and I would follow it all the way down to enacting a plan and executing that plan. Now a suicidal thought will come and I'll be, oh, wow. I have awareness about it. I go, wow, that's a pretty deep, dark, brutal thought. And I turn it into something else. Or I simply just get curious. Where did that come from? That's a real deep wound within me. And I don't attach to it any further by contributing to it with other thoughts, if that's making sense. So then the next R is basically what I'm saying. So the fourth R, the fourth R is to refrain from following your thoughts. And the fifth R is to rephrase that thought. But here's the thing. I'm not saying if your thought was, I am unworthy, to then turn it around to, I am worthy. I mean, you can. I mean, that is cognitive behavioral therapy, and that is what cognitive behavioral therapy asks you to do. But if that's too difficult of a leap for you, as it was for me, then I ask patients to just go neutral. So instead of saying, I am unworthy, you just say, I am. And you don't give any descriptive label. You just stay neutral. And that neutralization of the thought helps to neutralize the emotional cascade of hormones that gets produced in you too. And eventually you can then add on this positive piece as you continue to do the work in terms of learning how to love and accept yourself. So that's the 7 R's of working with problematic thoughts. And that is where people need to start, with awareness of what are they thinking, because most people aren't aware that they have this voice that's going on in their heads constantly talking to them, constantly. And it's your own voice. And, yeah. You know, and once you have awareness of that, then you can realize, okay, all right, well, what's beneath that? So what lies beneath that is stillness, but you have to get to stillness.
Yeah. I found that I have a running dialogue in my head quite often, particularly at night. So, in your book too, you talk about all the neurotransmitters and GABA, and you know, one of the things that helps me sleep, get into more deep sleep and more REM sleep, actually is a form of GABA. So
nice.
What I appreciate about what you just said was that your thoughts and how you look at your thoughts and how you reframe your thoughts can actually change the neurochemistry of your brain, which is an enormous concept. Medication isn't the only thing that can change the neurochemistry of your brain, which is
That's right. Yeah.
Now, early on in your description of how you got where you are, you talked about going to see Dr. Hoffer, and you mentioned orthomolecular medicine. Is that what you use basically supplementation wise for your patients?
Yeah. So, well, orthomolecular medicine is a kind of a mouthful. It's a fancy word that means basically the right molecules for your individual needs from a nutrition perspective. So a lot of people have the viewpoint, and I think the misconception, that orthomolecular medicine is high doses of nutrients. And it's not actually that's really not what it is. But, you know, in some instances, there can be higher doses that it would be prescribed, in some circumstances. So I started with that approach, and I started with the orthomolecular approach, which using Dr. Hoffer's prescription, but now I still take supplements, but not at the same doses as I used to. So I sort of explain it like this to patients, that the sicker you are, or the more unhealthy, or the more depressed you are, the higher doses we need. It's kind of like, if we've got to get a plane off the ground, we got to give it a lot of fuel to get it to cruising altitude. And then once we get to cruising altitude, we can pull back. And that's what I do. So I start people on a certain nutrients, depending on whether they're depressed or they're anxious or they have bipolar disorder. And then once they get, as they get better in treatment with me, then I pull back on the doses of the medications, because we're doing this underlying core work with the thoughts and the emotions and the spiritual work that helps them to actually heal. So.
And in terms of diet, are you using a whole food? I don't, there's so many names. Whole food,
yeah.
Paleo style, maybe leaning towards ketogenic type of diet. Is that the way you teach most patients how to eat?
Yeah. So I broke out. So I have Beyond the Label, and included in Beyond the Label is a mental health diet as one of the appendices. But I also broke that out and created a separate book called The Essential Diet, Eating for Mental Health. And I broke that out into a separate book, and it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, because I thought that I needed a clinical tool for people who don't know what to eat. And so I can say to them, here, this is the roadmap that gives you the 2-week menu plan, the shopping list, the recipes, the nutritional analysis. And I don't speak in that diet about all the things that, I'm taking out. But I will, you know, I'll tell you that it is dairy free, gluten free, sugar free, and it got a ketogenic emphasis. It's not. I think a ketogenic diet is a lot higher than mine, but mine's still quite high in from a macro perspective. It's still over 40. I think it's over 40 to 50% fat macro. You know, on the keto side, it's not 100% paleo, but it's focusing on the essential nutrients, and that's what I want people to focus on, because you can't make serotonin out of thin air. You have to have tryptophan, which is an essential amino acid. And this is the thing that was so shocking to me when I did get to medical school and we analyzed our diets. We had to do so for a nutrition class. And I was deficient in not only tryptophan, which goes on to make serotonin, but I also was deficient in B12 and iron. And these are really important nutrients that are required as cofactors in the pathway to making many neurotransmitters. So I cannot emphasize how important diet is. And like I said earlier in the call, I started with nutrition. Well, actually, I'll rephrase that. I didn't actually start with nutrition. I started with supplements. Dr. Hoffer started me on supplements. Nobody looked at my diet. Nobody. Right. Nobody. And because I had been, I had bulimia, and I had been a vegetarian, and I had been an athlete. So I had a lot of cracks in my nutritional foundation, and Dr. Hoffer patched those up with supplements, right? But from a root cause medicine, if I stopped those supplements, I would have ended up right back in the pit of depression again, because nobody ever looked at my diet. So that was really eye opening to me, and so that's why I created the Essential Diet, because I don't want people having to take truckloads of supplements. I mean, I'd rather you take a nutraceutical than a pharmaceutical. Absolutely. And I say to my patients the same thing Dr. Hoffer said to me. These are the side effects of the nutraceuticals I'm going to give you. Are you okay with living longer? Are you okay with looking younger? And are you okay with feeling better? Those were the three things he said to me. So I said, yeah, of course. You know, so that's the diet that I suggest. But yes, I think people too, you know, have to understand that this is an industry, right? The food industry wants everybody to be confused about what to eat. And they manipulate three molecules so that we are addicted to them: sugar, fat, and salt. And the more that you have awareness about this piece, and the fact that you just have to, you know, everyone's an individual, and there's many diets, I think, that can fit many different needs, right? The paleo diet, like you were mentioning, the keto diet. There's the blood type diet, which was popular a couple of years ago. We could look back every 5 years and see what the phase or craze has been. And there's always, I'm sure there'll be a new one in the next 5 years. Maybe it will be the essential diet.
Right. There you go. I personally, you know, trend paleo on the higher fat side of paleo, but what I spend a lot of time with, and I've been teaching more and more, is just nutrient diversity. Have to really, focus kind of like on the Terry Walls thing, where you're having 8, 9, 10 different types of vegetables. Yes. Maybe, you know, help with the diversity using some of Dr. Cowan's different powders that he's working on and developing, just to get, you know, different nutrients in constantly from tons of different sources, is what I think is really, truthfully, it's that's important. And then eliminating the obviously really, you know, biggest offenders like gluten and such, but nutrient diversity for our microbiome and stuff is really, really key.
Yeah, so there you go. You could write the diversity diet.
Yeah.
Because that is what, you know, there's a lot of people that have a mono diet, right? They eat the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, day in, day out. And I, you know, I do express that to patients as well, that you do, and you want to, like, there was an elder naturopath that I precepted under one time, and he's very much about eating with the seasons, which also is really important to support this concept of diversity, because during different seasons, you are exposing yourself to different foods, and you don't necessarily, like, he was against sort of eating, a lot of fruit in the winter time, and eating raw foods in the wintertime, because, and again, from Chinese medicine perspective, this also makes sense, because you're wanting to, in the winter, to be eating warming foods and more root vegetables. And so eating with the seasons and following the patterns and rhythms of the seasons and the gardening season where you live is an important piece too. So, but yeah, no, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, and I would agree with you too. And I think when you're more in touch with your body, you can learn to listen to your body and what your body needs. Like I definitely crave salads much less right now in the winter time than I do in the summer. I could have two, you know, salad, lunch, and dinner. This time in the winter, I'm looking for more sautéed vegetables, more cooked vegetables, more soups, stews. I mean, yeah. It's just the way my body works, and I think it's, and same thing with fruit too. Right? Fruit wasn't around all year round for all of us.
That's what I was trying to say. That's what he was exactly. Fruit, it wasn't available to us year round, right? Back 100 years ago, but it is now thanks to modern transportation. It's really interesting.
It is. And then once you just start thinking logically about things, it kind of makes sense too.
Yeah.
But you take a pretty hard stand on caffeine.
I know.
I was a little bit disappointed about that. I do love coffee. I buy very high quality coffee, but I do like my coffee.
Good. But, well, I'm glad the quality. That's important. Okay, sorry. Go ahead. I interrupted you.
What is your experience with caffeine and coffee and the pretty tough stand?
Yeah, and it really is my own experience. I think I grew up in a family with alcoholism, and so I have quite a hard-nosed approach to anything that I deem, from my judgment, to be an addictive substance.
Yeah.
So that's going to be nicotine, coffee, any drug, marijuana, you know, that list goes on and on. And then sugar as well, right? So these things that we consider socially acceptable, but they still have an addictive quality. So I never drank coffee, and I was waiting to use it in university so that I could use it like a drug to keep myself awake if I needed to pull an all-nighter. But I never needed that. But I think for me, with the mental health, with the anxiety, if you have anxiety or bipolar disorder, I just feel that it's more of a neurotoxin than it does more harm than it does good. But this is also, I want to explain that this is within moderation. I mean, I'm not saying if you want to have a cup of coffee a day, that's not the end of the world, but it's the person that's having 2, 3, 4, you know, up to 6 cups or more a day, and then they've got anxiety and they wonder why. Well, let's cut the coffee, right? So that's the perspective. And I recently, I guess, Steph, you're familiar with Bulletproof and Dave Asprey.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So I recently read his book, Headstrong, and I went to his Bulletproof, and I have to say I've seen the benefits, you know, I understand now. I didn't actually understand about the coffee beans and the mold that can be in the whole processing of coffee. So I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. But I think that I do take a hardline approach, but I think that's for people with mental illness, right? If you don't have a mental illness, then enjoy your Bulletproof coffee. Right.
No, I could understand and respect that. I mean, I jokingly say this, but it's true. The only thing I am addicted to really is coffee. Honestly, you know, and that I need, you know, those 2 cups of coffee around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't necessarily like that idea and concept because I don't have any other fixations like that, but it is what it is.
Well, it might just be because you need some adrenal support.
Yeah, I know. Well, I probably need to take a rest and to heal my adrenals for sure. Yeah. So in regards to your clinic, do you only see people in your clinic, or do you have a practice that you could see people via Skype or other forms of like webcast kind of care?
Yeah. So that's partly why I created the mental health I created the Moving Beyond course. It's a 10-week course. That's an online course. And there's a few options to do that. You can do that just online, or you can do that with me where you do it online, but then you have two calls with me, or you can do it with me where I'm there for the 10 weeks. So there's that option, but then there's also the option of, yes, I do see people via Skype and sort of telemedicine. Mm-hmm. And the problem, though, with me is that I do have a long wait.
Well, that's a problem and a good thing, I think, right?
Right, yeah. And so I generally like people, depending on where they are, to be under the care of somebody local. And then I know that because it really depends on what, because I am dealing a lot of times with life and death situations. If people are suicidal, it's not a really appropriate, I don't think, for me to be their primary care physician. If you're living in, you know, Delaware and I'm in Edmonton, it's, you need to have somebody there to be more accountable to you because of just the nature of your health concern, right?
I totally agree. And as a naturopathic doctor, you guys have a strong network of referrals, I would assume, correct?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I have one final question, and any comments you have at the end is just fine. It's a question I've asked for, about 6 months to every interview, and it's a little bit of a fun question. So what's the day in the life of Dr. Chris from kind of when you wake up to when you go to bed? Routines, rituals, supplements, what you eat, how you exercise, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, so I wake up and, you know, so I wake up now with gratitude. I start every day with gratitude. That was not the case for many decades. I actually would go to bed at night actually wishing I would not wake up in the morning. And when I did wake up in the morning, I would say, oh my God, another day. How am I going to get through this day? I hope I don't get through this day. So that's a huge shift for me because I've been dealing with this, my mental illness. You know, I'm going to say that it started when I was 15 and now I'm 51. So that's a long time. And so it's only been in this last decade that I have I start the day with gratitude. And then I do meditation and some form of movement. So whether that's yoga or a run or a swim or some form of movement, and the time can be as little as 10 minutes to as long as an hour and a half, just depending on the day. And then also depending on the day, there's the morning routine with my son, you know, getting him breakfast and lunch and that, you know, is your homework done? Get your backpack packed, you know, that whole thing. And then it's work for the most part, depending on whether I have a writing day or it's a clinic day where I'm seeing patients or if it's an admin day. And then I usually finish up to be home from school for my son, take my dog again if I haven't taken her in the morning for a walk, take my dog out and get out in nature if I can every day as well. And then it's just cooking dinner, chopping the vegetables, getting dinner made, and then some activity usually in the evening, whether it's, you know, taking my son to soccer or hockey, or we're just, you know, playing. We're really trying to limit technology. So we're trying to play, have games, you know, games where we're playing, interacting with each other as a family. So that's how we like to spend our evenings, and then it's the wind down time for bed. And I finish my days with journaling. I'm a big journaler. That's actually another book I wrote is a journal. It's a companion guide to Beyond the Label. It's a Moving Beyond a journal into self discovery. And so I'm really pro journaling. I think that's another dying art. I notice a lot of my younger patients, and I'm using the word younger, you know, under 40, they don't journal. They didn't grow up with that. And so I finish my day with journaling and then usually just some form of reading. And then in terms of supplements, I mean, we need another hour.
I hear you on that one. I'd be in the same boat, you know, yeah. But on the vein of, journaling. If someone wants to just a great app that you can use for a quick journaling is the 5-Minute Journal app. It's unbelievable on your phone.
Are you still journaling on the phone?
They have two versions. They have a book version.
Okay.
And an app version. So there's actually two. So I transitioned from the book version to the app, but it's a good place to start if you want to start writing, you know, starting your morning off of what you're grateful for, you know, all this kind of thing,
right,
and ending at night. So it is a good place to start for sure.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, there's something to be said about this action of I'm more pro like putting the pen to paper.
Yes.
I think there's just something kinesthetically about that whole process that I think, I don't know, I haven't looked at research, and maybe you know if there's a difference between that versus using your phone. Do you know what I mean?
I'm sure there's a difference. I'm certain there is, but it's an easy
good
way
place to start.
You know, it's a good place to start for sure.
Yeah, I've heard about that journal.
Yep. Now, last question for our audience, and this stuff will be in the show notes too, but best place to get to your website, your books, like, you know, the best way to get in touch with you.
Yeah, I think there's either the clinic website, which is Natural Terrain, which is TERRAIN.com, or myself, just my name, which is DR, and then Christina, which is CH, and then my last name, which is hard to spell, but BJORNDAL.com. So those are the two websites. And there's contact inquiry places in both. If you're wanting to become, you know, to do some work with me, there's different ways. Like I mentioned, there's the courses, or there is the application process to be a patient. And then, that's how to reach me. I'm on social media. I'm, you know, the usual suspects there as well.
And your books are all on Amazon, correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. In Canada, they're on Chapters, and I did get picked up by a U.S. publisher, so they were going to, I guess, represent the book in some other bookstores, maybe. But I don't really know what bookstores those would be, other than the big ones that I just mentioned. So hopefully, people can find it.
Yeah, just stick on Amazon is a piece of cake. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's there.
Well, thank you so much. Any last words for our audience?
Oh, I think just if you are listening and you are struggling with your mental health in some capacity, just know that there is another approach that can be complementary to your, if you're currently in the Western world, and that there is a way for you to actually live, I think, a better life than you may perhaps be experiencing right now. And then if you are really struggling, just know that there is help there, and I just encourage people to reach out and to get in touch, and I can help guide you if you're looking for resources but just know that you know you are here for a reason, and to trust that, and to know that, you know, to let love be your guide, and let me extend my helping hand to you. Because that's really what we're here to do as human beings. We're here to help each other. And so if you need to take my hand, please do so.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. It was great. My name is Dr. Noah DeCoyer, your co-host, and you are listening to the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. If you'd like what you've heard today, please share this with your friends and family, subscribe on iTunes, leave a review, helps us move up the charts. You can subscribe to our incredible weekly email at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com. Thank you, and as my oldest son Hayden says, be awesome and never unawesome. I'm alive, 6, 7, 8, feeling great.